I'm not buying a laptop. And she said, well, I don't need you to buy me a laptop too, because I have my spend, save, and give envelopes. And she said, I'm just going to move some from my spend envelope into my save envelope. And she said, and I will get that laptop. So she's got $90 right now in her save envelope. And the laptop she wants is like $300. She said, I might be down when I get it, but I'm going to get it. And she is disciplined. She...
It's approximately 9 o'clock. We're meeting with the investment committee. And basically, at the end of the last investment committee, we had discussed the T-bills, which they projected they weren't going to produce as well as that they should, but for some ungodly reason, they've taken off unnaturally. So they're doing okay. But we wanted to look at different strategies and maybe revamping the investment policy to take a little bit better advantage of our investment managers in their forte. The first thing I wanted to talk about is the city debt and our capital needs. First off, the city is in a pretty good shape. We're maintaining a debt service of about $17 million. We've just taken an electric rate adjustment of about $9 million in cash effect. And there possibly could be a $4 million garage and $2 million airport. But we think that we can still maintain that through the operations. Right now we have close to $70 million in the bank, which fluctuates down to $50 million. So basically we've got $160 million that we could actually take a look at on a long-term basis and get a better return. And that's what we wanted to talk about this morning, taking a look at different investment strategies.
The potential new debt, the $4 million, the $2 million.
Right. I'm just saying
what's
outlays.
Right. And you extracted that exactly to get the roughly 160, or did you throw some other cash out in case something the council comes
yes,
up with something?
That's exactly what I did. I took the most conservative viewpoint. And we're still, those are not concrete figures, that's why they're in pencil. I'm just trying to tell you that it looks like that on long term we're in pretty good shape, and we've had these investments out there for a long period of time, and we could actually take a look at maybe readjusting our policy to go a little bit more...
Maximize our return. Right.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. With that, I'm going to turn it over to you, Dave.
Okay. this is a great time. I included in the book the excerpt, and I assume we should go over in summary form our previous meeting discussion. This is a great time to be doing this. Obviously, the investment landscape has changed dramatically over the last 14 months. And bottom line, we are faced in a very unusual circumstance where the coupon or yield available for fixed income investments is close to or at historical lows, depending upon how and where you're looking. We are also operating as required by law under a very strict local ordinance. We included the provisions in there, in the book, and again our source was Muni Code, assuming that is the most current codified version of that. And being cognizant of some pretty tight and appropriate restrictions in the portfolio, we then wanted to take a look at, are there other ways that we can squeeze a little more return out of this, and B, in the process, is there a way that we can maybe address what is a potential negative if interest rates rise, and if they actually rise quickly. So we went, obviously the first thing is a discussion of the cash flow, and we would be looking to the city to determine the term buckets, if you will. We broke it down in our previous discussion. We kind of broke it down into three different buckets. One very immediate, likely to be called. Second, more medium term, more like the benchmark time horizon we're using right now, which is, of course, the 1 to 5 year. And then is there the opportunity for any longer term, which just from the comments this morning suggests yes, there is some cash out there which could be put out with a longer term viewpoint. The second thing we discussed was really defining the risk tolerance and return expectations. And by risk tolerance, not necessarily is there an aversion to loss. That's clear. This is cash management. We shouldn't be losing money here. We don't need to be investing in high yield or securities that are have the potential to go down in price drastically. By risk, what we're defining here is what is the actual term? Is it a problem if you have a portfolio when you're mark to market at the end of the year, and just taking that mark to market results in a level of depreciation in the assets, you know, from a reporting standpoint. Now, we're holding any securities, obviously, potentially out to the full term, so there may never be a realized loss, although we currently have an actively managed pool. However, when you take the snapshot at the end of the fiscal year, is it a problem over any single given year if the portfolio shows a slight decline in asset value? So that's how we would be defining risk. So within that framework, again, looking to the city to come back with number one, the term, kind of structuring out the term, the liability, and then B, kind of the timeline as far as risk, acceptable risk, and then taking those buckets and, you know, allocating dollars to those buckets and then breaking it down into a couple different allocation plans here. So the first and easiest option here, and I'll give you the conclusions first and then maybe run through the supporting discussion we have. The first and easiest solution is to maintain the status quo. Okay. In discussions with the managers, there's a general consensus which makes perfect sense from our standpoint. There's a general consensus that it would be helpful if the duration limits on the managers were expanded. Right now we're plus or minus 25% per the investment policy statement, and there was general consensus that if we had more latitude, we may not use it, but it might be a good thing. And in this case, everyone was discussing the ability to maybe go a little bit shorter in duration, past that, 75% of the target policy. The second item I proposed and kind of bounced around to the managers was if we're currently managing against a 1 to 5 year benchmark, the assumption is they're not going to own securities past the 5 year term. If we were to grant them the latitude to own individual securities on out to 10 years, but still maintain that interest rate sensitivity target, that gives them more ability to maneuver in and around the yield curve, which we can talk about the benefit of that. We're not in this room, we're not suggesting that they do something or not. We're merely giving them the latitude, the extra tools in the box, and the ability to do so if they think it's appropriate. And of course, that's what we're paying active managers for, is to make those adjustments. So the simplest solution here, item number one, the least amount of change, maintain the status quo and make the duration changes on the duration parameters and the individual security maturity parameters. Okay, then we went in and took a look at each of the managers and then tried to put in the framework, actually placing the city first, and then let's pretend we're going to assign managers later. And here our suggestion is to move to what we would call a master sub-policy structure, where we have the existing investment policy statement, and now we want to give different assignments. Right now we have a horse race, right? And well, that's interesting and certainly puts appropriate pressure on the managers. It may not be the most efficient allocation of capital. Our thought is if we allocate by manager specialty, for example, I know Dave Verfine at Sawgrass really doesn't have a whole lot of interest in spending a lot of time on mortgage asset backs and, you know, CMBS, and we're taking CMBS-type securities. But that type, those types of securities, he wants to spend all his time and all his value over the years has come from buying good corporate bonds in the right parts of the curve. So, for example, Dave would be assigned the Merrill Lynch 1 to 5 year government corporate, where we are, and he isn't going to have any expectations that he's going to be going outside. He's going to be focused on a specialty. Now, PFN, over time, has a preference for government agency type structures, and as we've seen in their bond portfolio over the last couple of years, they've introduced some very interesting agency structured notes, and that's their forte. Ask them where they would like to fish. That would be the response, and it's generally in the shorter, much shorter maturities. Then the third element, if we break the bond market into the three pieces, the remaining elements would be what type of agency mortgage or mortgage type products, asset-backed type products that we would want to invest in. And here in this case, Trustco, and I'm sorry, I'm always going to call them Trustco. They are really a generalist, and being candid, it's been hard for us to pick a particular area of expertise. However, they have...
Let me back up to a little more earlier point first. Because I hear what you're saying, and the concept of it makes sense to me. But let me get a very basic question on the table first. Of the three managers we have, are they the right three? That's the first question.
That's a great question. I think we've asked that question. I think what we talked about the last time we got together is putting the structure in place, seeing which managers fit which structure, and then evaluate them if they can actually fulfill that requirement of that structure, what we talked about.
Right.
In that way, is that we don't know at this point in time, because they may be focusing on something that they're not really, really ready to zero in on. Like, for example, you know, Sawgrass, you know, fitting that mold. They may be or they may not be, but we look at putting the structure there and then evaluate the managers on whether they can meet that objective for that structure.
Refresh my memory, how are they paid? Is it based off return or?
Percentage of assets.
Okay.
Now, Stable River has fallen outside of their guidelines on occasion, but then they've been the most productive.
Yeah. And that really bothered me at the end of the day. You know, if they color outside the lines a little bit, as long as they get it there, but you know, I'm just curious as we begin to put them in these categories of expertise. Certainly, I'm not a person to determine that, and you three are, especially you, I would assume, can make those determinations. But what if we're wrong?
If we're wrong on the determination?
Yeah, putting them in certain. Putting you in that box and you in that box, what if we're the ones that are wrong?
If that structure is the best for the city, then we find the people that can manage that structure. I mean, putting the structure in place, not necessarily saying what can you do best, and the city making its structure around what that manager can do best.
So our contractual agreements are what, annual? 3 years, 5 years?
They're annual, have renewable.
Okay, so if we decide someone doesn't fit, we'll have less than a year.
To take them out. And they have to, they're going to be measured, and that was my question, because you're taking them out of the horse race, now you don't have a measurability. So what they'll be measured against is their own index and their own universe. And at no time do we want to risk the assets. There's a...
Right. Now, a couple of political realities like thrown on the table, which again, I don't think should stop us from moving forward, and the council may surprise me. Typically, elected officials like to work in a realm of their term. So, in other words, the 5 to 10 year window. You know, they say, "Well, I may not be here then." That comes to their mind. And the second thing is, what if we want money to do the project, and it's tied up for 10 years? I'm not saying personally, this council's been very disciplined. They don't even know, realize we have money, I don't think, but I just want to throw that on the table. I'm not saying we shouldn't pursue this, but just be aware that those might be a couple of political...
Just add a little bit. What we're looking at is, from Davis, what is the best structure for the city, and that, as far as the return and squeezing a little bit more out. I think our thought process is to put that structure in place for what's best for the city. The second part of that piece program would be put the right manager to the right structure. And then the second one is evaluate that manager on that structure, and if he can't fulfill his obligation, then we look elsewhere. So I think that's the kind of the roadmap that we've actually...
So future contracts may have to have different clawback provisions.
Right, and we would have to actually look at the contracts itself, because after all this is said, we determine the structure and we determine the investment manager to go with that piece of the puzzle, then the next thing for us to do is to come back with a recommendation on what percentage of the assets to put into which bucket, based on looking at the budget, looking at the capital budget, looking at projects coming down the line. If a lot of things are coming up, then we may want to move some of those to the shorter term, and so that those assets will be available, 1 to 3 years down the road.
Right. This also puts more pressure on the budget process and the departments to think beyond their current fiscal year as to really what projects are needed.
There's an idea of the 5-year capital improvement plan, which I haven't quite...
Which at this point is more a wish list. They put every project under the sun they could think of, and we really need to narrow that to, and it'll help with the banking process. If we know in year 3 we need to pay for this, we'll be moving monies as they come due into the short-term bucket to be able to pay for the parking garage or,
Well, and in some cases the projects don't rise to the priority to pull it out of the bucket. We just need to wait till additional dollars come.
Now, if I could address the unanticipated need issue, per the ordinance, all of the securities, whether they're termed short or termed, I won't say past intermediate, we're not talking anything past intermediate, are all high quality, A or better, if they're not Treasury agency, fully liquid securities. So the worst case scenario would be one that we just came through, and that's if a particular sector of the market is going through a liquidity crisis. And I would argue what we've been through is the 100-year exception, but they do come in period of time, and that period of time hit when there was a withdrawal, although I assume we're going to have some reasonable time period for planning, then those securities may have to be effectively sold at a loss. But again, if we're pooling, then we reduce the probability. I mean, I'm sure we're not going to drain all the reserves.
No.
Leave those securities out
and
there.
And I don't think it's ever going to be, frankly, I don't think the window will ever be any more than $5 to $10 million, which is kind of why I was asking what your...
I think we hold that in SunTrust.
Yeah.
I think adequately be able to fund all
right.
those.
Right, and we would have enough in operations to make sure.
The only exception to that is, if we have these massive hurricanes like before we had one
in
year.
In 04.
We have cash we can get to for that. I mean, that's critical.
And it's available. We may have to make a management decision on, selling off
some
of the loss
or
something.
I think they spent $12 or $13 million very quickly last hurricane season, but a lot of that was utility money coming out of their reserves and stuff too. But this is aside from the 25% reserve we're going to keep in general fund at all, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I think we'll be all right then. Okay, just getting back to Stable River, though. You say you're having a hard time figuring out what bucket is theirs.
They are. They fit the generalist.
Are they the right ones?
He corrected me the same thing. My thought process was who goes to what bucket, and they kind of pulled me back and said, let's look at the structure first. So I was basically repeating the exact same thing, because I started down that path too of what's the investment manager's best, what do they do best? And we said, let's put the structure in place first and make sure that fits the city.
They are... I mean, candidly, speaking objectively, they're the hardest one to fit into a specialty niche. They are, I think we would argue, a true generalist, and I don't think that they would refute us in the room.
But they had the best return, and again, your PFMs are out there, and that's an easy dollar to make, you know, and that's, you know, they, you know what they're buying you, and that's the top, the prime. They're not going to take a horse race, they're not going to gamble, but Stable River might gamble a little bit more, and they've given, they've produced a little bit more.
Okay, so let's continue on.
Okay. The placing structure first, it does identify, irregardless of Stable River, it does identify there is a potential enhancement to bring in another manager to the fold, whether it's an addition or a change, that focuses primarily in taxable munis and some of the off, still liquid, still high quality, but some of the less mainstream type investments. And right now, arguably, that would be the greatest source of return in a very difficult return environment. There are managers out there who that's their forte and could, down the road, be brought in to fill that spot if we're taking structure first, which was the argument.
So our buckets, whether it's 2, 3, 4, or 5, doesn't matter. That may mold as we move along.
Right. Okay, just finishing the conclusions. The simplest specialist format would be to maintain the current 1 to 5 year term, not go beyond that. And we assign specialists. Well, each specialist has their own investment policy statement, which has their own measurement standards to risk concerns. Everybody rolls up. We roll all the numbers up at the Bogdan Group. So we're looking at them. How did the whole program do? And we rank the whole program and continue as we are now, aggregating results and providing benchmark and peer group returns. We're just adding an extra layer of work here now, because now we're, each one is going to have their own specialty, their own benchmark, and we're going to be monitoring that as well. The other option would be to extend the benchmark, and that would be to allow maturities out to 10 years and actually use the benchmark, again following the same specialist structure. And what we thought was the most interesting structure would be to go to the tiered or multi-pool structure, and that's what I was referencing, where we break everything up. And for discussion example, we were just terming out by a third, a third, a third, as far as term and need, and we would still have specialists there. So those were the concluding options or recommendations. Now, if I could take you through in a time-efficient manner some of the considerations. If you take a look at page 3, and again, this was an excerpt of the report. The issue on the table here is, obviously, if rates rise by 1%, what is the potential exposure of a bond portfolio to loss? And I'll use the 5-year by way of example here. Obviously, this is the Treasury curve, turned from 1 year on out to 30 years from left to right. And in red, obviously, is the example where rates rise by 1% over a 1-year time horizon. What would our holding period return be for that bond? And in that risk-free treasury, we would have to mark to market a loss of 4.66%.
We were saying losses by interest rates rising. Are we saying a loss of potential revenue or realized revenue?
This would be a unrealized loss. This is merely an exercise of mark-to-market.
Okay.
So we would be required at September 30th to mark-to-market.
To draw a line.
So you wouldn't necessarily, it would be a realized loss, but we would have to mark down our investments to the market rate, which would be which is the potential 4.6 cents.
Well,
10%
loss. Generally, when we buy bonds, we lock into the rate, do we not?
Yeah, we're not talking about the coupon, though.
You would be locking in the coupon. And in a rising rate environment, just going through the basic bond math, rates rise, the value of your bond goes down, you collect the coupon, and in this case, the coupon is insufficient to cover the markdown in the asset. Okay? Now, we're still holding the bonds, but we have to take the snapshot.
I think we're going to have to find a more simplistic way to explain that to the council. Marked market and coupon, they won't have any idea what that
means. The overall value of the portfolio will decline by that after interest collection.
And that's just, that's a snapshot.
Right.
You know, and I think what you're saying is, can we be tolerable to mark down our investments at September 30th, you know, one time to the market?
And the council needs to understand what that means, though, when we say a snapshot in time, because they're going to know, well, what does that mean to our budget? What does that mean to our annual appropriations? What does that mean? That's the kind of questions that are going to be going through their head.
You would equate it to their 401k, their IRA, whatever investments they have. You get a monthly statement.
You know, or the interest drawings that we have that feeds our budget.
That's a snapshot in time.
So.
Yeah, there is a positive side to this, to answer your question. And that's that as rates rise, the reinvestment of the coupon that's paid is reinvested at a higher rate. So over a longer period of time, we are getting the benefit of reinvesting at a higher and higher and higher coupon. So the end result, holding that bond to maturity, where we through the markdowns, we're collecting coupon, we're reinvesting the coupon, actually results in a higher positive return.
You started that with if.
Right. We're running through scenarios.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Past months is not indicative of future results.
The purpose here is just, this is just a harsh math.
Sure.
Okay? And obviously the shorter
what
the
term. What you're really trying to do is paint a picture of why we need to be more flexible in our portfolio.
Exactly.
That's really what we're trying to tell the camps.
Exactly. And as everyone's aware, the shorter the term, the less the impact. The longer the term, the greater the impact.
Either way.
Okay. Now that's the harsh math. Now let's flip up to page 5. And there are many mitigating factors that ease the harshness of the math and when we put it to practical application. I've listed all those there. However, the main point, the punchline here is, you get a portfolio diversified across term. You have a portfolio that has income enhancement well above that paid by treasuries, and the higher the coupon, the higher the income, obviously the more the offset the portfolio has to any price declines. Now, here I put in an exercise. forgive me, it's a little bond modeling here. but what I wanted to show here was usually when rates rise in any business cycle, it's not a parallel shift. Can I use the whiteboard again?
Sure.
I don't think any of those are permanent.
These are
I thought you were gonna check.
So this is your term, right? Here's your 30-year bond, and here's your percent, and here's your 3-month T-bill. Okay. The yield curve is very steep right now. So, and I'm gonna incorporate a couple things all at once here. By extending the term, if that's 5, by extending the term out to 10, we can pick up a lot of incremental yield and coupon. Okay? So there's reason number one for considering stretching the term out. Okay. Now, the point of the math here in this exercise is typically looking back in a business cycle, all right, your 30-year bond, this is everyone's anticipating inflation out here, right? And up here everyone is anticipating Fed funds rate. So usually what happens in a cycle, rates rise across, right? Everything goes up, but the greatest increase and the biggest damage to a bond portfolio on a mark-to-market is actually kind of in the middle of the curve. And by allowing the managers to go out here, they can effectively put on, and again, I'm not trying to manage money here, I'm just trying to give them the option, the ability if they put in a barbell type of structure, right, they're putting more emphasis here, more emphasis here, and then minimizing their exposure here because the yield curve is flattening, okay? The outcome, actually, of that scenario, I ran with these three benchmarks. So, for example, if we look at the aggregate bond index, all maturities, all bonds, and we have a typical bear flattener, we can still come out with a positive 1.72%. If we use the intermediate ag, which would be the 1 to 10 year proposed here with one of the options, we can still come out with a positive 1.49%. And the government credit index, we can still come out with a 1.34%. That's only the longest. On the previous page, what looked like the most damaging maturities to hold, but because they're blended into a portfolio and the managers are definitely changing that mix, that is an active tool they can use to minimize the potential loss. So there's another potential mitigating factor that can be brought about by active management.
We actually use that same theory in reverse on some airport leases we're doing, working with a corporation that wanted a 40-year lease with a 3% increase every 5 years. And by the time we peaked out 40 years, because it climbed so steep, we were losing a lot of money, so we cut it back to 30 years to the 40 and cut out that steep curve and cut the deal. So just the reverse of what you're saying, which on the lease side, it makes sense. On this side, you want I understand what you're saying.
Right. Okay.
You know, it hurt us on the lease side. We didn't want that stretched out because we lost more money locking in at the rate.
Next up. So the end result, the punchline here, the end result, particularly since most rate rise economic recovery environments are bear flatteners, the end results are not the huge negative numbers, and we've got all those mitigating factors, and that being a pretty big one. So let me take you to, let's go to page. We just ran some trailing numbers here, and let's go to page 8. And this will be the last piece of the.
What do you mean by trailing numbers?
Supporting information here. We did a historical look back.
Okay.
Okay.
So you apply this principle as if it was in place right. 6 years back.
All right. And it's a focused look back, as you'll see as we go through. It's really focused on what the drawdown or loss experience has been for the different blends. I ran three different examples here. The first is current Merrill Lynch Master 1-5. And in this case, I divided the portfolio essentially into thirds, although there's really four pieces here. The first is the corporate government, 1-5 year A rated above. There's our Sawgrass assignment for all practical purposes. Treasury agencies, 1-5. There's a PFN assignment. And then I blended the Merrill asset-backed securities master index and the mortgages 0-5. This covers the other area that Trustco has typically placed a fair amount of emphasis on. Anyway, from a structure standpoint, these would be the major pieces of the market. And then we applied the same sectors, only this time we went out to 10 years and applied the Master 1 to 10-year index. And then finally, the last scenario would be the actual tiered portfolio, where we have a 1-3 year bucket, a 1-5 year bucket, and a 1-10 year bucket. Okay, so those are our portfolios.
What is this match compared against, though?
Sure.
What is this compared against? I mean, how are we?
And what we're going to do is we're just taking a look at the experience of each of those individually.
Compared to what we did experience as much.
And yes, and I included the current 1-5 year.
That's this chart.
And that would be on page 9 and 10. So on page nine, obviously we're aware returns have been pretty good historically, but that's how the portfolio is plotted out. And as we would assume, the longer dated portfolio with longer dated maturities gave us the highest rate of return over time. But really the focus of this analysis is on page 10. And on page 10, what we're looking at is what historically has been the worst case scenario for these blends. And what you're looking at here, the maximum drawdown and the drawdown begin date, end date, and period. What we're analyzing here is how many consecutive months of decline in value occurred, and when it did, what was the result? So for example, your current portfolio structure, the maximum or the worst case period of time was a negative 1.66%. It actually occurred, started in April 2004 and ended in May of 2004. It was a two-month period drawdown, and the recovery date, full recovery date, was August of 2004. That's when we went back to zero. And basically the pain index, the statistics going across there are basically risk measures showing the first one, the pain index, is the frequency and depth or width of the drawdowns. So if you look at the chart up there, something that has a pain index, we're trying to look at how long was it, how deep was it, and that number captures what we're showing there pictorially. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So running through each of those scenarios, obviously the maximum drawdown, the worst case scenario, was with the master 1 to 10 year. It was 2.23%. Not that much worse, frankly, than the 1 to 5. And it was also only 2 months, and it was also break-even in August of 2004. And the efficiency ratios as we go across, the punchline here is everything is very close. And again, this is just an index measure. And in each case, the government corporate includes treasuries. The master 1 to 10 includes treasuries. The mortgage and ABS component includes a small amount of treasuries. And if we have active management here, they're going to be de-emphasizing treasuries, emphasizing the income from the other sources. And if they have the ability to maneuver through with yield curve structures like that,
still struggling to understand what this number means in comparison to what you just pointed over here.
Okay.
I'm assuming you're saying that if we had applied this strategy back whenever, these are the rate of returns we would have expected. I'm trying to understand what these numbers mean.
On page 8, basically what we're plotting is the experience of three different portfolios: the master 1 to 5, master 1 to 10, and those portfolios in percentage terms were made up of 33%.
Oh,
okay. That's the asset allocation.
Asset allocation. Thank you. And I should have labeled that.
All right, that's what I was struggling with now.
Yeah. So here's three strategies,
gotcha.
And there's the three allocations.
Okay.
And then the result of those three strategies is what we plotted on page 9 and 10.
Okay, so, and the result is by year. That's what these are, right?
Correct.
And my question is then, how does this result compare to the actual result that was realized?
Oh, okay. And we did not, for this analysis, we did not include your manager active results. We just took your current index that we're using to benchmark the results.
Because the question I would ask is, okay, year-to-date 4.75% in the master 1 to 5, on our current strategy, what would it be?
I think we were in and around,
they all just about,
I know it's less than 4. But what I'm saying is, if we had a pictorial that very quickly and easily said that, because we just went through this with our hedging program for our electric rates, mm-hmm. our gas hedging, and we adopted a new hedging policy, and we did the, I forget the fancy name for it, but if this had been in place for the last 20 years, what would have happened versus, and we had the same graph with all these peaks and how we would cut those okay. curves down, and the council got that. So if we can blend it to get to that point, which basically showed them, you know, we still would have lost money, but we would have lost a heck of a lot less money on our gas hedging program. Because one time we were, what was the number, $160 million that we had to put up in guarantees against the hedging. And now it's like $2 million because, you know, we've worked through our hedging policies and buying gas futures basically. So we had, maybe I can get that chart from Matt, show it to you, and maybe that can give you a little pattern that might help the council.
Sure.
See what you're, I understand it, I get it.
Yep.
I knew that we haven't seen, you know, what are we, 2.7% right now, year to date, our returns?
On a year to date, you're actually 4.35.
Okay. The last quarter, I think, was a low quarter, if I recall.
And, the month of November, it was down just under a half.
Okay. I get you. We just got to, we're still thinking like financial geniuses instead of council members, I'm thinking from their perspective, so.
What, and this may be what is represented in the chart, but one other or any option to address that, and we do this for you in the quarterly book, is to plot, and we plot the accumulated, you know, growth of a dollar, growth of $100, which, as you're well aware, is one thing to show returns, but it's another thing to show the experience. And if you have big drawdowns, your dollar accumulation, to your point, is going to be much less.
Okay.
So that would probably be an effective way to,
I think it would be,
indicate that.
Okay.
Okay.
Seems like a sound strategy. I think you guys have already looked at this quite thoroughly. And already a little comfortable with it. What's the next step?
We kind of need to determine on a structure as far as whether we're going to do the tier or the, that's what we kind of need to have some guidance on.
I think our preference was the tiered structure.
Which is going to involve rewriting the investment policy, getting you back to council to get a council approval, probably February, March.
Well, what we're looking at here is possibly we'll have a, I don't know if this fits into your schedule, but if we decide on a tiered structure, that what we would basically do, we have to rewrite the investment policy, which we would do that. And then we would maybe bring that back to the investment committee in our meeting in February.
And what was your rationale for picking tiered?
I like the idea of the different buckets and the strategies of what we talked about as far as being able to fit the right manager with their, like I said, fishing in the right pond, basically.
Right.
I think that's
maximize economic potential with the least amount of downturn.
What I'd like to do is maybe the first meeting in January is pitch conceptually this to the council. Let's get their buy-in and then start rolling out the work. Second meeting in January?
Well, I'd like to have...
Just the concept.
Well,
we don't need the contracts rewritten, any of that stuff. They just need to understand the philosophy behind what we're doing. Because I hate to do all that work when they say, what? No way. And my experience with the council is you have to piecemeal it to them, feed it, let it grow on them, let them think. So what's your hesitation?
I was trying to look at the investment policy, having all the piees and determining our long-term,
I think just a very generic brief discussion like we just had is all that's needed initially.
And would you like us to, though, just give them our recommendation, not the four choices? I think it'll confuse them more if we say,
I think we're going to go to the tiered multiple structure.
Explain the tiered.
I think that's fine, but if we just have a few basic graphs that can show them and give rationale that,
maybe that's the idea.
Set them on the concept and then say, you know, here's our schedule over the next 90 days or whatever it needs to be. Implement it, roll it out.
What you did, here's our current structure. Here's the construction, here's the structure we propose, is this tier multi-dollar.
We have that dollar history chart or whatever we've got that give them some semblance of why. And the biggest thing is telling them, you know, this is certainly a good graph, you know, that first one, that this one's important to show why we need to have some diversity in there. I also think, you know, we've got to tell them this is, it's a new day. It's not what it has been over the last decade or two. Got a new set of rules, and we need to write our guidebook to maximize the terms. So are we comfortable with just a 15, 20 minutes?
I think we did that. Would you feel comfortable doing that, putting that together?
Yes.
We have to come back to council, because that way you can, maybe we'll do it for the second meeting in January, which
would
be
fine, but you can do it early enough for, maybe we bring it to cabinet. If the cabinet can't understand it, then we've got to simplify it.
Right, that's what we'll move it to the
18th. Honestly, my objective will be to get this to you in your hands by the 23rd, because okay. I will be taking a leave.
Okay. Then we can, you know, if we need to simplify it further, just to make sure they can understand and the press can understand. But I think conceptually, I think this is very good, very proactive. And it's interesting, you know, talked about the competition and the pressure against the managers. That was Mr. Corley's tack back then, was he'd look them all in the eye and, you know, you better get it done. You guarantee me 4%, you don't get it done, and you know, and who outdid who, and, you know, maybe some think that's productive, but I'm not sure it ever was. So, and that's what we do with our staff. We take our people's talent and match them to the job and not the other way around. So that makes all the sense in the world to me.
So recap, you'll get this presentation to us by the 23rd. We'll put it up, we'll bring it to cabinet, we'll discuss it, we'll vet it. We'll bring it to council with just the conceptual idea on the 18th of January. We'll meet in February. The investment committee will meet in February. At that point in time, we can actually, we'll have the blessing from the council. We can look at the investment policy, and we can also look at our recommendation on the long-term cash flow needs, and we can make recommendations on what percentage of the investment goes into which bucket.
Let's go ahead and get on the next agenda, because I don't think our policy says it has to be the council president. It's just going to be a council member. Is that right?
Right.
To sit on the
board. Yeah, because Gwen has been on it.
So what I would like to do is maybe on the next agenda, just have an agenda item that says, you know, term is up. Would you like to reappoint or appoint someone new to the council? Because frankly, there may be some benefit to Mr. Gwen continuing. For one thing, I'm not sure Mr. Owen would ever make the meeting. But we'll at least put it forward to the new president to decide. If Mr. Quinn wants to continue, I think that would be fine. I think
he was before.
Probably the best positioned council member to get what we're doing.
Okay, and then after we get the buy-in from the council, then we'll go back and rewrite the investment policy from there.
I would suggest let's present a timeline, whatever you think it needs to be. We can bring back the final documents. Are these ordinances changes?
No.
Just
policy changes.
Resolution. Still, resolution requires two readings too, though, right?
No, only budget resolution requires two readings.
Good. Well done.
Then the last piece then will be the manager appropriateness.
Correct.
Again, just for confirmation, to make sure I'm taking back the correct direction here. It's agreed the master tiered, the three pool structure, and that would be following on page 8, the last indexed allocation, which by example only, we did an allocation.
Right, we will let you know what the allocation is, because we may need to reshift.
Let's mention that, you know, be careful about saying three pool, because I heard you say there might be a fourth category potentially, so multi, it's a good word, multi-tier. So that may change over time.
Right.
Based on the environment. So.
Okay, and again, just speaking candidly, looking forward, assignment of the Merrill Master 1 to 10 year A rate and above, categorically,
Stable River.
That is going to go from the Stable River Cash Management Department to another area of their product management.
Yeah, how much pushback are we going to get from our managers?
I'm sorry?
How much pushback are we going to get from our managers on these changes?
Speaking perfectly candidly, I think TFM will be delighted because for our previous estimated allocations, they're going to get more money. I think Dave Thorfinn and Sawgrass will be completely comfortable with the outcome. I think the only questionable one may be Stable River because it's leaving one profit center and the assets are moving to another profit center and then finishing the piece. We are candidly looking at alternative managers to that other product elsewhere.
I would hope our managers know this, but I would really, I think it would be really, I hope they don't try to, I don't think they would, but if they were to try to, they feel like they're being cut out, run to the city council, try to circumvent, I hope that would be outside their code of ethics. Would it be?
Should be.
It really should be.
But again, to your point, we're not suggesting hard and fast. There's three.
Yeah.
There are different ways and no set number of managers to get the job.
We've got time to massage that and get it right, and then we'll probably be moving target over time. So, it's very positive, very proactive.
All right, great. We got a plan of action.
Thanks. Well done.
Thank you.
Thanks for everyone's time. Let's get it without going into recent hands.
John, if I can keep you just for a few minutes, if you need to run, do something quick.
I'm not sure we conveyed this, but we can leave this in January.
I didn't get